Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, and am delighted to welcome special guest, Reverend Sherry Blackman, author of Call to Witness, the true story of Jane Gagliardo and her battle with disability, discrimination, and a leading pharmaceutical powerhouse. Reverend Blackman is an internationally published writer, award-winning poet, and journalist whose work has taken her to over 30 countries, and she has been featured in the Christian Science Monitor, the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Star Ledger, and the World in I magazine. In 2007, she was ordained with the Presbyterian Church in the United States, or USA, and today is the pastor of two churches. Hello, Reverend Blackman.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And our listeners are going to love hearing this story and the battle that this young woman waged. As listeners of Healing From Within are aware, it is a primary goal of the show to share stories of everyday people with extraordinary challenges and the transformations they experience. And they experience this transformation when they act from their spiritual core and embody the values of love, compassion, kindness, loyalty, and trust, and come to realize that life is a gift, no matter what the circumstances or challenges that must be faced. We'll begin, Sherry, with this. Would you please tell us something about your spiritual interests and types of written work you did before you were brought to this subject and wrote Call to Witness?
Sure, certainly. As far as my own spiritual journey goes, it's been a long spiritual journey, a lifetime spiritual journey. And part of the change in my life, if you want to call it a transformative moment, was when I went to seminary starting in 2003, graduated in 2006 with my master's in divinity. But one aspect, you know, having grown up in a church that encouraged spiritual introspection and spiritual growth in this rich inner life, I think the missing thing, at least in my personal journey, was this emphasis on social justice. I went to a Methodist seminary, and that was a really one of their values that they very well transmitted to me, if you will put it that way. And so when I was approached by a friend of mine about Jane's story, that idea of social justice and being involved and out there and maybe on the edge and maybe getting dirt under your fingernails and maybe taking a risk instead of staying so safely cocooned in one's own spiritual, I don't know, consciousness.
Individual world, right, in your individual,
yeah, exactly,
and personal growth, a social consciousness or universal consciousness became
right.
important
to you. And
there
has to be a balance.
Yes.
Yeah, it had to be more of a balance, I think. My life had pretty much been focused on the church, the faith community, and yes, certainly there's always those feel-good missions, and I don't mean to put that down, but this real sense of out there fighting for those who can't fight for themselves.
It's sort
one
of
the
like,
most profound.
Yeah, it's sort of like truth, justice, and the American way.
American way.
Heroes, right?
I think one of the things that really resonated with me with Jane Gagliardo is that she really stood up by herself. She really stood alone. And she was so sure of this injustice that had been done to her. Their sense of conviction was so powerful that she really changed the lives of those around her as well, including her lawyer, who basically wanted her to settle the case because there's never guarantee that once you go to court, you're going to get what you want. And really what she wanted was an apology, and she wanted her job back. But we can get into that if you want.
We will get into that as we go along. And a question that relates to this. So when did you meet Jane? And when did you decide to share her story with the public?
I met Jane in, I think it was probably 2005. I was midway through seminary, still working, and had a family at home to care for. So my warning to her is, okay, I think this is a great story. I think it'll be empowering and inspiring. Just by Jane's sheer sense of conviction is really what made me passionate about the story. But I said to her, it's going to take me a long time. I still have seminary to finish. I have ordination exams to take, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it did take me quite a few years to get the story. It's very difficult when you're writing somebody else's story because not only do you have to meet with them on a regular basis, but I had to meet with a lawyer. Then you had to write the story. Then you had to bring it to them for accuracy. So it was pretty involved. So it did take me quite a while to do.
Many books take a very long time. I just sent off over the weekend my new book, Whispers from Spirit, to the publisher, Select Books in New York. And I would say I'm working on that over 5 years. And it's constantly unfolding. Even the epilogue of the book happened only recently. So there is a plan to all of this and a time for everything, as they say, under the sun. So I think it's great that you took on the project when you were so busy. And I think you probably spiritually were meant to do exactly that. And you did a wonderful job. The book shows many instances and circumstances that we can all relate to and learn from about our own personal growth and social injustices that are out there. So let's go on to talk for a minute about Jane's earlier life with her mother and father and how the abuse that she and her mother endured may have influenced many of her adult life choices, her health, her marriage, and her court battle. So can you tell us something about her earlier life?
Certainly. And I think this is really important to who Jane grew up to be and her own sense of what is right and wrong and the way that she has been willing to put herself at risk, if you will, in situations to help others. So to begin with, the story begins with Jane waking up on her 30th birthday with no feeling in her body and having this sort of, her first inkling that maybe she had multiple sclerosis. And so waking up on your 30th birthday, to me, I said to Jane many times, you know, that is significant. It's something really that I feel could have been explored further on her end as far as on your birthday, on your 30th birthday. And so the story flashes back to when Jane was a young child and who grew up in a home which was rife with physical abuse. Of course, where there's physical abuse, there's always emotional abuse as well. Her father was a very violent man who put Jane's mother, his wife, into intensive care over 3 times. Her mother learned how to cope with life did not learn to cope with life because she became addicted to tranquilizers. You know, we have to understand in a generation of women who many of them never learned how to drive, right, who were so dependent on their husbands, when there was no domestic abuse laws as there are now, and we hear all the time about violence and women who succumb and are killed in these situations. But Jane witnessed this, and Jane, even as a young girl, stood up to her father. And I find that very interesting because Jane is a fighter by nature. She's very strong about, you know, what is right and what is wrong and doing the right thing. And as she grew up and, you know, she watched her mother basically deteriorate. After 48 years of marriage, her father left her mother for another woman or women, as we need to say. And the mother, I think, died within 8 or 9 months later. So we watch. We don't see any victory here. We don't see any triumph here in a mother's life. But I think Jane, in some sense, embodied that spirit of, idea of boundaries too, you know, and I think that is something that I think a lot of women in our day and age still struggle with boundaries.
Yes, absolutely. But Sherry, the difference between the father and the daughter was that she was a hard worker and a champion for learning and helping others, while the father was a callous brute,
right,
so to put it. But you know what? This is still happening, even in our age of enlightenment and with all the media. There are still families and many children being abused in so many ways, and many of my shows have talked about that. But the point being, the spirit and the soul seek fairness, even from a young age. And she was able to sustain that part of herself which couldn't be taken away. And we can hold that personal power. And she is a testament to that. Now, in your book, Call to witness, many situations that all of us are faced with in our daily lives are addressed. For example, Jane worked at Connaught Laboratory and mentioned to one of her coworkers that there were things being said about the office, and it seemed like the woman in charge had it out for this particular person. Well, sometimes bosses or managers don't like competition, and when someone's doing a really good job and attracting attention, their insecurity, you know, takes over and they're afraid of loss. This is a very rampant problem in many workplaces and with many women, I think even more so than with the men out there. I mean, men just are used to competition, and they handle it in different ways. So how might people like Jane or anyone in this situation as a justice seeker suggest women handle an issue like this if it arises in the business place?
That's a really good question. I think that Jane...
A hard question, herself, actually.
Yeah, it's a really hard question. I think that when you're in a position where you are under someone, as Jane was under her supervisor, Judy Stout, I think that in itself changes dynamics, where instead of being your colleague or your peer, so I think that sort of sets you up. I think Jane she knew when Judy came on the scene that there was going to be problems, because they had a little past history. Judy had once rented her apartment, an apartment from Jane, and lived next door to each other. And I think that Judy really does sort of epitomize a woman, I hate to say this, but maybe a woman in power, a woman with some new power. I think that she embodied, even worse, this fear that we have in our society of those who are disabled. Now, Jane, you need to know, if she walked into a room right now, you would not know she had multiple sclerosis. She doesn't have the visual signs that most people associate with MS, which might be a balance issue or something like that. So it wasn't really clear, but she was having issues at work, and she offered
supervisor. You're right that she was having certain issues because they weren't providing a very appropriate atmosphere.
Reasonable accommodations, correct.
Yes, and healthy atmosphere
exactly.
For anyone, much less someone. But that wasn't the whole problem either. There was some history, and there might have been like a negative emotion like jealousy for past events because they had known each other before. And there also fear, as many people have, if they think they're losing the edge or there's someone else who's really talented, they want to make themselves appear to be in control of everything, often at the expense of someone else. And I think that was also part of the problem here. But let's go back to another pharmaceutical company. Jane, one day in the book, asked a worker if they knew about this other pharmaceutical laboratory, Pocono Biological Laboratories, and she was told that the place must be sitting on toxic waste and that the lab was hoping that it would never be uncovered. But the person sharing this information, and I want to talk about something about this, so I'm going to read just what you wrote. "It will never happen. Money buys silence." Now, the local people knew about the skeletons of animals in the pond with birth defects, but they didn't know how to do anything about this problem. So can you tell us how Jane and others were finally able to address these actions that pose a threat to the general population?
You know, I don't think that Jane really was able to address those issues. And here's the thing. When that gentleman in the Swiftwater Inn, which has since been torn down, met with Jane and her coworker that day and was talking about the loss of his son and his belief that it had to do with the toxicity in the environment because of the pharmaceutical companies, I'm sure anybody who wanted to investigate any manufacturer of pharmaceuticals or any manufacturer is going to find things. But when you're working with, now this was Connaught Laboratory, was the same place that Pocono Biological Labs was also known as National Drug Company, and prior to that had been Jonas Salk's not really prior to that, I have to reword that, in the 50s was also where Jonas Salk invented the polio vaccine. And in the process of developing these vaccines, and the book goes into a little bit of the history of vaccines, you learn a lot of things about how they use monkeys and how still there is a strain of monkey kidney cells that are for the culture of the polio vaccine. So there was always, has always been animal experiments or using animals as the medium to which develop pharmaceuticals. So there were always stories being told on campus and out of campus about whenever they would do new construction and dig up the ground, the kind of skeleton and mini skeletons, the kind of horses who were bled for their blood for serum, monkeys, all kinds of things, frogs with three eyes. I can't say it was ever investigated
sure.
And I both know, right? If you're working for a company that is your bread and butter,
it's
and
hard.
Is the major employer of your area, how much trouble are you going to make?
Well, it's hard, but still,
right?
Ethically and morally, we know changes have to be made. Now, talking about just using animals is not only what goes on, because in the book you describe that in August 2nd, 1990, Iraq invaded Kuwait and seized control of that country, and then the U.S. deployed troops. I remember that. You remember that, too, most of all.
Yes, I was actually over there.
Okay.
As a journalist.
Okay, great. So you know more about it than I do, but let me go on with this. But Jane received the list, and she had to send vaccines out there. And you write in the book, and this is a very important comment, seems war, like disease, is great for the pharmaceutical companies, and to make their quotas and money, they will do anything. Now, you know, anything can include a lot. But then we go on to think about, also in the book, you say, in World War II, 400 prisoners in Chicago were infected with malaria so we could develop new drugs to combat the disease. And the Nazi doctors also defended their own medical experiments based on these Chicago experiments. So again, inappropriate measures are not a means to an end, or what seems
right.
to be a justifiable end in reality. Yeah?
And I think what you're touching on is really important, and I would like to add this to what you're saying, and that is you can go anywhere, you can do research, and it's now public knowledge of many of the medical experiments that have been done on prisoners, et cetera. But I think the key issue is, including the Tuskegee syphilis experiment, which is well known, but I think what's really key here is when anybody, company or government or person, dehumanizes another person because they're prisoners, because they're whatever they are. This is one of the key things in
Absolutely.
The book, and that is
yeah.
that Judy, in many ways, does or did exactly what we often do, unaware of it, that we dehumanize those who are not 100% like us because they have some, they lost a leg, they have MS or multiple sclerosis, they have some disability or some disease that makes us uncomfortable because such remind us of how frail life is and how vulnerable every one of us is.
Absolutely.
And Judy,
yeah.
in some sense, lost her case or in some ways what lost or what made Jane win this landmark case is because Judy actually said in the company and in court that Jane's disease made her uncomfortable. And I'm not picking on Judy because obviously we're picking on Judy because she was in the courtroom and she's basically what the court case is about. But the idea that she really does embody what I think most of us, if we really paid attention and really did some introspection, that's exactly what we feel and what we don't want to look at, or we turn a blind eye. And I think this idea of dehumanizing is really key to anything
well,
that we're talking about.
Well, I think what this all boils down to is that maybe 25% of the population are very sensitive and using their intuitive or spiritual natures and would not really act this way. I mean, negative thoughts come into us, fearful thoughts. 50% of each day is negative or positive thoughts. But acting on them is a different thing.
I
and
agree,
that's
yes.
what we're helping people, and your book does help along those lines to show what we can do to avoid falling into these pitfalls. But now, she had MS, and it was really diagnosed about 4 years after she was in the company, but her symptoms were very mild or in remission. I think we should tell the audience something about the disease, because people hear it and they're not exactly sure of how it affects work, your personal life or your work, because with any disease, diabetes or MS, many times people cannot see it. It's working in
Correct.
The body, and it's working on the moods and ability to think clearly at times, but people don't physically see it, so they discount it. So can you tell us something about MS, what it really is?
Certainly. Well, multiple sclerosis is a chronic autoimmune disorder that affects movement, sensation, and bodily functions. And it's caused by the destruction of the myelin insulation covering the nerve fibers in the central nervous system. So for many people with MS, but not all, and sometimes but not all the time, Jane herself would have difficulty walking, slurred speech, she'd have memory and concentration issues. She has chronically, she cannot feel, I'm not sure that's the right way of saying it, but she's never had complete feeling in her hands and legs since she was diagnosed.
Yeah, that was said in the book. You did say that in the book. You did.
In fact, some people say that MS is like walking on balloons. And I think mm-hmm. that's a really excellent way of trying to understand how it might be if one. Jane also suffers, as do many people with MS, with muscle spasm, which you can't see, but were very painful for Jane. During her workday, she would have to lay on the floor just because it was so painful for her, and it seemed to help her give some relief. Very much so, like you were talking about diabetes, MS, and many diseases are more evident in how tired one gets, the fatigue factor.
Mm-hmm.
When Jane's lawsuit, interestingly enough, for the Americans with Disabilities Act, or otherwise known as ADA, Jane's lawsuit changed the law. And basically, it was a landmark case because now physical or mental impairment that impedes or limits one or more major life activity now included the ability to remember, fatigue, so memory issues, and the ability to concentrate.
Yeah.
So these are major things. And like you say, these are things that are not necessarily visible.
At all times. Right. They're not visible at all times, but when they act up, they can influence productivity for a little bit. But we really have to learn to be more than tolerant. We have to really learn to know no one's perfect, they will never be perfect in a physical life. And we have to be kinder. And I don't want to use the word tolerant, because you don't tolerate it. You work with it, and you use cooperation and healing ways to love each other and help those people who need a little extra help. Now, on the cover of your book, I love the cover of your book. Can you tell us something about the photograph of this statue?
This is a wonderful story. And inside the book, you can actually read just a brief explanation. So I was searching for images that had to do with justice. So this is St. Michael on the cover of the book, and it's of a sculpture out of in in Austin, Texas. And it is a sculpture of St. Michael slaying Lucifer. Now, you don't get the whole picture there on the cover, but if you open the book, you can see, especially with the second printing, we made it a little bit bigger. What's so fascinating about this, when I found the image, I called the museum, the curator of the garden, and I said, you know, I really love this image. Would we be able to use it? And she wanted to know what the book was about, and I explained it to her. And then she said, you know, that's really interesting. She said, because our garden is made and our sculptures are dipped in wax so that anybody with a disability can come and touch and feel them. What's really awesome, too, is that the sculptor, Umloff, when he created this sculpture, he made Satan, and he says this, or Lucifer, with a beautiful face, because he wanted people and children to understand that evil can look beautiful. I did this experiment once with my churches, and I said, okay, I'm going to say these words, And they were like negative words like hate or anger or hostility. And then you say words like love, compassionate, and loyalty. There was actually a different physical response.
Dr. Okto wrote a book and did this experiment with water when he put words like positive words or negative words under containers of water, the molecules actually formed either very beautiful patterns or very negative. And that's maybe how cancer is in our stressful society and where people are being abused constantly. We're 98% water at birth, and then as we age, a little less. But we are affected by the words and actions and attitudes of other people. So you're absolutely
right. And there's no way to avoid that, is that? Because we cannot live in isolation.
There is a way to deal with it, protect our energy, and to try to not engage in negative behaviors or with people, and to say, if you want to talk about this, maybe later, and you just take yourself out of the mix and don't allow yourself to be drawn into the emotions, the negative emotions that are being given off by many people. So you can learn to pick up clues. The body gives us a lot of messages where we're physically comfortable and where we belong and where we don't. So this is what children need to be taught, and parents, so that they can teach their children how to approach the right environment to keep them healthy. I want to thank you, Sherry Blackman, for the creative and life-enhancing views presented in Call to Witness, a true version of a challenging young woman's life and her triumph over early abuse and discrimination in the workplace, and also a serious health challenge, MS. Jane Gagliardo's determination, her love of justice, and the strength of the human spirit go beyond suffering, and it's a tribute to all who follow the inner voice of the soul. To learn more about this legal battle, go to calltowitness.wordpress.com. In summarizing today's episode of Healing From Within, I would like to share something that Sherry Blackman wrote in the epilogue of the book. Gagliardo versus Connaught Laboratories became a landmark case determining that loss of memory and the ability to concentrate are major life activities, constituting a disability under the Americans with Disabilities Act. Justice may have been served in the Gagliardo discrimination case, but clearly it has not been served for all who struggle every day with a disability to live productive, meaningful lives in the marketplace. A message has now been sent to corporate America. Those with disabilities remind everyone else of their own susceptibility to illness, injury, and mortality, and such reminders can beget the impulse to punish those with disabilities, and from this arise such anxiety. And this is from a statement from the Presbyterian Church of the United States of America, and it's what we were talking about earlier. My personal hope at this amazing time in our cultural development, which really is a spiritual revolution, is that we will see the face of love on others and within our own hearts, and do our best to help the challenged and ourselves do no harm to anyone. Make the choice to love rather than fear or distrust, and each of us will find peace, health, and create a world that is truly reflective of the laws of spirit. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and invite you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, to listen to leaders and innovators in the field of holistic healing, energy medicine, spirituality, science, and the arts, who share their views for moving forward from the limited dark view to the vision of light and hope. Thank you.